Good evening, everyone. Thank you so much for coming, and thank you, Bonnie and Kim and all the Boom Project people. As you heard, I'm from a small coal mining town. And in this town, everybody was like brothers and sisters, and all the women were like mothers, all the dads were like fathers, and you couldn't get away with anything at all. When the coal mines closed, my mother and all the mothers had to go do domestic work in the rich people's homes. And so did the fathers, actually. So the first poem I'm going to read is from the anthology called Mad Dog Wind. I keep hearing that mad dog wind howl through the valley, scratch at windows of company storehouses, and rattle bone chimes long empty of marrow. It is the sound of my father's bedridden beg for air, the sanctified preacher's mouth full of prayer. It must have been the way the wind's cool, wet hands bent the screen door back until it creaked like lungs pressed against 40 years of December ice. A boxcar full of storm is headed this way, with some old hooded coal miner hanging on, with arms wrapped around its slick neck and riding low. This wild locomotive hugs the rail close, stirs coal dust over sacks wrought with black disease. It must have been the way the wind rattled the screen door that makes me hear my father's cough, a slow drag in, then out, each tired breath his steady release of the pick and shovel life, a hand over reins to a machine that lends a steady push, pull of air into cavities being eaten by the creeping darkness of the coal mines. And funny how it all begins to come back to me, the signs that crawled unnoticed in and out of my father's aluminum lunch pail, his gray work pants, the hard hat, boots scuffed and slashed with bituminous cuts, scars that prove the skin of pain is never easy. And funny, until now I hadn't noticed my father had grown old, not even when months before he asked to buy him a cane. Hadn't noticed the knee of his right leg could hardly bend up the back steps, only noticed the smile he worked his face so hard to make. Then I'd like to move to the other poem in the anthology, Jackie Patterson Saved Us. And I'm so glad she did. Jackie Patterson Saved Us. One. The Reverend Mothers and Sisters said, on turning 16, you should believe you are woman enough to clean the rich lady's house, responsible enough to pick up after grown folks who have money enough to afford sloppiness. On turning 16, you should believe you are strong enough to heave a 2-gallon pail of water, wring a mop resting on hips enough and dare not spill a drop, then on knees enough, wax the floor enough to see the shadow of your beauty. Two. And then she came like a prophet walking on water, or call it beginner's luck, maybe just plain fat rat getting over. Whatever it was, Jackie Patterson saved like Jesus wouldn't have done if he just believed what we were told when we were turned 16. It was the way Jackie swaggered from the country squire after her first day of bucket work. Under the striped cotton dress, she wore 6 pair of panties, all silk and lace, from the rich lady's chest of drawers. And as she shed them in the living room, we oohed and awed, reached for flowers in meadows, ribbons, flying fairies, and the very next day, the rich lady came for her undies. And we all laughed when Jackie claimed innocence, said she just wanted to try them on. She really did intend to bring them back. We weren't sorry when she handed them over, the silky pinks, the blues, the violets and white ones, so white, not white gray like ours. And all summer long, we loved her like a goddess, sneaked gifts of chocolate kisses, wise potato chips, and Mission Grape Pop through Jackie's window, because we knew she saved us before we turned 16. Thank you. Oh, thank you. And in this small town, the women worked some days, some weeks, 6 days a week, but definitely on Sunday, they all went to church. And this is, I'm working on a few for a manuscript that I'm working on. And this is Feet Tell the Truth. This is for Miss Cora. I don't know how she walked the road with those feet that made me hurt just looking at them as they took her to fiery breath in the pulpit. Her skin, powdery egg white, so fine she would blow away if it hadn't shaped a body as near a spirit as I could imagine walking down Lincoln Drive. A dress decorated with dust, reached fingered fibers to hold a hem. Above, folds of flesh flopped over sides of shoes like dough gone mad with desire to rise. How I laughed when she screamed holy to moly, frenzy of words heard by a god who stumbled over decades of worn down teeth in a mouth full of Holy Ghost I could never see. Even now, I cannot feign loyalty to invisibility, bitterness of no ordinary eyes that cut as a butcher might hack meat from a bone with practice instinct. And yet, the woman's feet kept walking through that gaze again and again, bearing weight of every ache it takes to hold steady against pressure of belief in a system of bulk, like rice, like cotton, like tobacco, like women breeders on the block, commodity in the marketplace of servant bunions, protrusions of what a language feels like when walking in the dark. I never understood what feet said until mine began to move, stepped in and away from mapped patterns of flesh left by Miss Cora's imprint. And I always wondered if Jesus welcomed with arms spread wide, stooped to the lowly task and washed her feet as a disciple in humble servitude. Or did he cut his eyes away in shame, pretend not to see deformed beauty come home to glory? And then, as I said, all of us, all the children, I was one of them, we're like brothers and sisters. And we still are today. Anything that happens to any one of us, everybody else knows. And we, you know, are always kind of like, really, there's something about having been born there and the people there who protected us and raised us and nourished us in every way that they could. This next poem is called My Captain. And this is about a girl who I simply adored, and she's about a year or two older than me, and I did everything she said just because I loved her. And this is My Captain, Elegy for a Girlfriend. I cried into the curve of your brother's shoulder, took your picture from the easel with a promise to keep it from being folded into a square or creased and wrinkled in the back seat of my car, crumpled beyond repair, as often happened to loose papers I balled and threw into the trash. Instead, I rolled your picture into a telescopic cylinder, and later when I looked through it at the night sky, one-eyed, I saw you Morse coding a light message, as if we still whispered lips to ear until our breath became condensed secrets meandering and stored for later fun. Hold on. I knew there was going to be something that would happen to me. The silly path. I'm the one that something happens to. And I happen to other people as well. My Captain, Elegy for a Girlfriend. I cried into the curve of your brother's shoulder, took your picture from the easel with a promise to keep it from being folded into a square or creased and wrinkled in the back seat of my car, crumpled beyond repair, as often happened to loose papers I balled and threw into the trash. Instead, I rolled your picture into a telescopic cylinder, and later when I looked through it at the night sky, one-eyed, I saw you Morse coding a light message, as if we still whispered lips to ear until our breath became condensed secrets meandering and stored for later fun. I could have plastered a note, wanted dead or alive, across the top of your head, like in those old cowboy movies when rewards made bounty hunters ride plains and prairie in search of one or two or more, lawless kin scaring folk to death as your mother did that summer day she found us at the swimming hole, and you splashing about in your good shorts and halter top. Your mother whipped you in that playful sunny day heat with a double extension cord, one head for the TV and one for the living room fan. I felt plugged into that two-headed monster who lashed your wet body with slashes across your back, welt to your legs, and everywhere else the plastic whip split wet flesh. You crouched, ran around the yard to get nowhere fast. I ran to keep up. I cried. You did not. With hands guarding your face, you took each lash from that household whip with an ouch. Oh, girlfriend, you were my captain. I stood at the bow with you as the waves crashed down. And I swear, if you had been whipped to death in that fury, this cabin girl would have drowned too. Well, thank you, Rebella, thank you. Lastly, ode to a lunch pail. Of course, it's my dad's lunch pail from going down into the coal mines. Ode to a lunch pail. Oh, how coal black and beaten you are. Lunch pail going down each morning, held by callous fingers squeezing tight, heartily grasping the plastic handle hard and swinging you hip side into the dark work of your religion in the dust below. Whose feet are those that trudge the gilded path between clapboard houses and sprigs of spearmint twigs to carry you like a child kicking and clanking to baptismal again and again? As early morning light betrays hunch of shoulders curved to resist the cold demon with shovel and pick. Aluminum flesh bear scars of sin and scrapes bear witness to sooty wings you once had. Now silver-flaked bruises in their silent want to be bright are dull in the drudgery of each day going down, down, down. Your dome top in its bituminous blackness is a night full of bits of light. Hopeful though, the metal stars forged of aluminum shine honest work ethic and tenacity is the metal you are made of. You must be black magic, the way you hold what keeps the belly full, and at the end of a day's work still have a scent of satisfaction wafting up from crumpled wax paper. Exemplary model for the way your rusted latches work overtime to secure what's on the inside. So full of pride you hold tight to the end, and though you have been called just a dumb bucket, at the end of each shift, you're top shelf in the kitchen cupboard. Thank you so much. Thank you.